The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon on the Biz Lunch. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. We're going to talk a little bit later in the program about having a more of an eco-friendly Christmas. Here's an idea. Don't buy wrapping paper. It's bad. It doesn't recycle well. So we'll talk about ways that you can sort of make an eco-friendly Christmas out of things. Frank Senna from Crane Chicago Business stops by in the second half hour. We will review the mayor's announcement today about his plans for pension reform and also talk about the future of malls. There's a real trend in the Chicago area for tearing down the big anchor stores at the malls, or at least plans anyway, and putting up apartment buildings. We'll talk to Frank about that. But we start on Wednesdays with Terry Savage. You can read more from Terry at terrysavage.com and newspapers around the country, TV as well. But really, the favorite thing she does each week is join us on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Absolutely, and you know that.
Look at that. You came in right on cue. How are you, Terry?
I'm terrific. Didn't you love the letter we got, the email we got from some nice woman who shall remain unnamed, although she signed her name, thanking us for doing the show we did a few weeks ago about reviewing your Part D drug plan,
right?
Because she found out that if she hadn't done that, it would have cost her a lot of money. Her husband's prescription was no longer on that particular plan's formulary. So we like to know you're out there. It makes us feel good.
Terry Savage saves people money, and we'll talk chicken money a little bit later in the program. But right now, let's go to Wall Street. The Dow is up 445 points. The NASDAQ up 163. That's 2.25 points. The improvement for the NASDAQ today. We've been through this, but are there concrete reasons for this, or is this another sort of trade talk whim, or what's behind the increase today?
You know, if you're a trader, you love this. Volatility is your friend. You want to take risk. You get in, you get out. You have an opportunity to make money. A market that's just trending isn't really much good for traders and the exchanges either. But I think, and I've got a real feel for who's out there listening to us, that the vast majority of people are investors. They didn't even set out to be investors, but somewhere 25 years ago they were told, you won't get a pension from our company. So sign up for the 401k plan and make a few decisions along the way. And for people in that position, all this kind of up and down should be scary, I think.
It should be scary.
Yeah, it should be.
Right. So
I think it is. I think what the markets are saying is that the least little bit of news, of course, we have a lot of uncertainty in our political side of the economy about tariffs, about taxes, about rescue plans, and globally as well. So that doesn't help give confidence in the long term for the markets. That's number one. And number two, we just got a lot of action in the markets, you can't watch every, 500 points up, 400 points
down.
Well,
okay, so let me put it this way. We are baseball players, those of us who are in the market for our retirement plan or long-term investment. Let's say we're baseball players. That's the game we play. When we watch the stock market every day, we're not watching a baseball game. We're watching a basketball game. It's a completely different sport. We're watching these traders who are in and out short term in order to turn a profit, who benefit from this volatility. Does that make any sense, that analogy?
You know what? I'm shocked that you have that. That's an interesting analogy, Steve. And I guess it makes a lot of sense.
Well,
I think to most people, I spent personally a lot of years writing books on TV talking about the long run, talking about there's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified portfolio of large company American stocks with dividends reinvested. That's a fact. That's the Ibbotson market history. So that anybody who's been doing this for the last 25, 35 years since they were told, okay, sign up for the plan, and they kept putting $500 a month in or whatever, of course they've come out ahead. 25 years ago, the Dow was, 1,200, 1,500. We're near 25,000. So hindsight has taught all of us who are paying attention that you really need to stick it out for the long run, not panic at the bottoms. But then you turn your head 180 degrees from looking back, and you look forward, and you say, wait a minute here. Now I've got so much money, whatever that X amount of money is, and I've got a relatively shorter amount of time ahead of me. We all hope it's going to be longer, but shorter than what we've been accumulating. And how do I make sure that it doesn't run out of, you know, I don't run out of money before I run out of time. And even just common sense says, great, I hope America survives and prospers, and I really hope when I'm 92, the Dow's at 56,000 or something like that. But I don't want to take that risk at this point, not with all my money.
All right, so,
and so this is a different decision point.
I want to talk about that in the second segment, but before we get there, the Fed meets next week. It looks like they will increase rates. Donald Trump gave an interview to Reuters where this time he called Jerome Powell a good man. So
that's called the kiss of death, you know. Unfortunately, he can't dismiss Jerome Powell.
He's his own good cop, bad cop, the president is. But it doesn't matter. The president doesn't want to see an increase, but we probably will, correct?
Oh, yeah. So futures markets are pricing in an 80% chance of an increase by the Fed next week. We've had strong growth. Consumer confidence is strong. We're not facing any real challenges at the moment. And although energy prices pop back up a little bit, they've been taming consumer price inflation. So I think it's very likely to see what the Fed needs to do. It needs to get rates up enough so that if there is a crisis, it has room to cut and stimulate the economy whenever the next time it needs to do that. So they're going to take advantage of this and raise rates again. And it probably won't make much difference to you unless you've got chicken money.
And we've been talking in recent weeks about the volatility of the stock market, talk of a recession or a downturn in the future. And that brings Terry back to one of her favorite subjects of chicken money, where it's money that we can't afford to lose. Terry, explain chicken money for me.
Exactly. Chicken money. Everybody has some. How much? What percentage of your assets? Depends on your age, your stage in life, your financial situation. But the most important thing is no salesperson is coming to call you to say, set some money aside in chicken money, safe investments. They don't get commissions on those products. And so you have to do this thinking for yourself. And in this short segment, I'd like to make 2 points. Show you why chicken money and where to look for it. And number two, show you that you need to balance all your assets, not just your savings, but stuff inside your retirement plan. So let's try and do that.
Okay, so tell me about where to find the chicken money.
Okay, chicken money is one decision money. You never have to worry about losing money. You may not get rich. You won't get rich. You may pay a little taxes, so you probably just about break even with inflation. And the easiest place, typically, and I'm going to give you an exception now, is a short-term CD, less than a year in a bank, a money market mutual fund, or U.S. government treasury bills. Those are IOUs directly from the U.S. government. They come in 3-month and 6-month maturities, and it's easy to do, and there's, you know, my columns up at terrysavage.com. The most recent one is called Chicken Money.
Okay, but
and
so how long, how much chicken money do we need? I mean, is 6 months worth of...
Maybe not. Maybe if you're already retired, and yeah, you've had a great run in the stock market, and you know that you're going to have to start taking big hunks of it out for required minimum distributions from your IRA, then maybe you need 2 or 3 years worth of chicken money. And that's the point I'm making. This is not about you're 42 years old, and if you lose your job, you need 6 months of living expenses. This is about what's the big picture. Now, there's something unusual going on with chicken money right now. I'm looking at Bankrate, and it says the average one-year CD rate in Chicago is 1.25%. 1.25%. Yes, it's up from practically nothing. But the average the current rate on 6-month Treasury bills this minute, because they auction them off every Monday and there's a huge trading market, is 2.55%. The banks are thinking you're going to say, okay, I'm safe, I've got money in the bank, but you're probably not going to get enough interest unless you go to one of those online banks, and if it's FDIC insured, it's safe. I prefer to send you to treasurydirect.gov. Search T-bills at terrysavage.com. You'll see the whole article about how to buy them. The interest income, by the way, is free from Illinois state income tax. It is the safest kinds of obligations. Yeah, you do it all online, but somebody can help you. It's real simple. TreasuryDirect.gov. And instead of getting 1.25% for a 6-month CD, you get 2.5%
from
the federal government.
We've got about a minute left. So talk to me about a few things. First of all, if you're in a 401k, you don't have a lot of options, do you?
Exactly. Your 401k plan was designed to help you grow your money. That's what it did very successfully. So there are very few safe places. Few 401k plans have a money market, but some have a stable value fund, so you can move out of your stock mutual funds, a portion of your money, into the stable value insurance contract or a very short-term bond fund. If you have an old 401k from a previous employer, roll it over to an IRA. Go to Fidelity or Vanguard. They'll handle it.
So a lot
you
of people,
won't pay taxes, and you'll get some safe choices.
A lot of people think, yeah, I've got that 401k sitting over there. I'm not touching it. I don't need it. It's just growing. But you should put it under your own wing, right? You should take it, take control of
it. If you're still working for the company, you cannot move out of your 401k.
But if it's an old one.
But if it's an old one, sure, roll it over. And don't let some broker call you and say, well, I know what you should do with your 401k. Just go to T. Rowe Price, Fidelity, Vanguard. The cost, they'll handle the paperwork. The costs on whatever you invest in will be low. There's money market, safe options for part of your money. And for sure, the ongoing money management fees are going to be the lowest of all. This is time to take a big look at the whole picture. I want to say one more thing. You've been growing a 529 college savings plan for your child since your baby was 6 months old. Now your kid's a sophomore in college. You're allowed to switch within the plan, and frankly, if I had a kid 2 or 3 years from college, I'd move some of that money to the most conservative option in the 529 plan. Less exposure to the stock market. It's been a 10-year bull. We're out beyond most bull market records. Time to be a little bit safer with a portion of your money, no matter what your age.
All right, that's Terry Savage. Read more about the column at terrysavage.com. Terry, we'll talk again next week. Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, Mayor Emanuel just wrapped up a couple of hours ago, I guess, a big speech at the Chicago City Council where he was talking about his ideas for fixing the pension plan, some big ideas, and they come as he is essentially on his way out. Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business joins us on most Wednesdays to talk about what they're writing about at Crane's, and Greg Hines had a preview of this morning, and I would imagine he's writing about it this afternoon as well. Frank, welcome to back to the Biz Lunch.
I plan on paying off the city's pension obligation by putting it all on Red 16.
There's going to be a casino in Chicago, maybe, right?
We're hoping, you know. I mean, or maybe you're not, but I'm hoping.
Well, so the mayor's talking about a variety of things. He's talking about profits from marijuana sales, legal marijuana sales, going to the pensions. He's talking about profits from a casino going to the pension. He's talking about a constitutional amendment to change the cost of living increases. I think right now city workers are guaranteed, or state workers, 3% a year.
3%, that's right.
Which is way over what inflation has been. So, I mean, I tend to defend the pensioners if they signed up for it and the government was stupid enough to agree to it. I don't fault the people collecting the pension, but, you know, that's one area where I think they should be able to give. Anyway, what do you make of the whole thing?
Yeah, so that change in the pension obligation was, as you recall, passed and then held to be unconstitutional by the Illinois Supreme Court. So it would require changing the Illinois Constitution. So it's probably a very heavy lift, but a lot of people are saying that, you know, something big like that will need to happen to get the pension underfunding under control. And the other, you know, huge thing that he's been talking about for a while is issuing up to $10 billion in bonds,
right,
to pay down a portion of the debt, the pension obligation bonds. So those are kind of the two huge, possibilities. And then there's the casino, then there's the medical pot, or the legalized pot revenues and all that good stuff.
So, you know, but the mayor's done. I mean, he's leaving office in just a few months. Is this what is he sort of putting his marker down, like, this is what I would have done? I'm not quite sure what the future holds for this plan.
Yeah, you got to wonder, even when he floated the $10 billion bond idea several weeks ago, that was the thought then. You know, he's in a lame duck period. The only thing that really he has going for him, I guess, from a momentum standpoint, is just the thought that the longer this gets put off, you know, the harder it is to solve. But again, in Illinois, we've been saying that for how many decades now?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, I want to move on because Al Bigallon wrote this story about the future of malls. And in the story, it says the amount of available retail anchor space, the big stores at the ends of the malls, hit an all-time high in the Chicago area of 12.3 million square feet this year, up from 10.8 last year. The anchors are going out of business, and developers now are looking at turning malls into apartment complexes. Tell me about that.
That's right, and I'd like to take credit because I'm squatting now in the Sears building at the Six Corners.
That's
yeah,
nice.
I just moved in there.
Well, you know, a mall
got
near
a
me is
Bunsen burner and
Hawthorne Mall up by me. It's 60 in Milwaukee. You know, they've lost the Carsons and the Sears, two major anchors. And I know that's one area where they're talking about building. But man, it seems like there are apartments going up everywhere.
Yeah, so at Hawthorne, that's a great example. They're exploring plans that as many as 600 apartments and a hotel. To the 1.3 million square foot property, with the loss of the huge department store anchor Sears and Carsons. And this is something that is a bit of a mini trend. You see some from scratch, kind of these downtown concepts that are cropping up in some of the suburbs where they kind of build a mall from scratch that has integrated mixed use with apartments and condos and all that kind of stuff.
Well,
but to actually bolt the apartments onto the old malls is kind of a newer concept.
And Frank, right across Milwaukee Avenue from Hawthorne is that sort of brand new development. They took vacant land, they popped up a Whole Foods and REI. They put, I don't know if they're condos or apartments, but that kind of a pop up town already exists there. They're talking about doing it at Northbrook Court as well.
Yeah, it looks like it. And, I've seen the one in Bolingbrook, Streets of Bolingbrook. You know, you got the nice movie theater there. You're going to go out for dinner. So I don't know. I mean, if you've got something like that across the street, how attractive is it to, move into an apartment building next to an empty mall? But they got to try something because there's a lot of real estate that isn't being occupied by retailers.
Well, we'll see how that works. But coming soon to a mall near. And the idea, too, the developer says, look, this goes from a 12-hour activity center to 18 hours if we have got people living here. And there's more ways
to. Yeah, and so maybe you can attract more restaurants and you can actually build all those amenities. And it's not a bad idea. I mean, I didn't realize that one was right across from one that had been built from scratch.
And
so
that'll be
a tough thing.
And the reason for restaurants and other things like that is that they are sort of internet proof, right? You're not going to buy, you could have a meal delivered through the internet, but by and large, you're still going to go out for dinner, even though you might not go to Macy's to buy a sweater for Christmas.
Yeah, so you're still going to sometimes go out for dinner, even if you order Grubhub a lot. There are occasions where you will. So, yeah, a little more internet-proof.
All right, we'll check that out. Frank Sennett, read more at chicagobusiness.com. We got squeezed out. We didn't get no time to talk about the beer hot tubs.
I'm soaking in one right now.
I said
read
you
about
were
it at chicagobusiness.com. It's a beer-soaking spa.
I said earlier that Frank is soaking in a tub of beer, and we'll talk about it later. Maybe we'll try to get the business owners on coming up sometime soon, or we'll visit it next week. It's time
That'd
to get out,
segment.
Though. You look like shriveled-up hops right now. Get out of the tub, will you?
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Do you like supporting the little guy? The up-and-coming underdog that's taking on the big industry? Well, then, Opternative might be the company for you, as they wedge their way into the eye care industry. But wait, hold on, just getting word? Okay, they just changed their name. They are now Visibly. The company sees the name change as a potential to help bridge the gap between the old-school industry and their innovative ways. Change is hard, but if something like shaking up the name can help that, why not? Speaking of the big guys, let's talk Mickey D's. The global fast food chain announced yesterday that they'll reduce the use of antibiotics in their global beef supplies for a healthier product for consumers. They're planning on cutting back the antibiotic usage in their largest markets and shooting for totally curbing the supplement by the end of 2020. As the largest beef buyer in the world, that will literally influence change in the way that producers and consumers see meat. Aw, look at this. Big and little players coexisting in the business world, making it all work out. Warms my heart. I'm Bennett Wakeknight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:52. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, have you taken your garbage out for the week yet? Our garbage is picked up on Tuesday, so I saw ours. Maybe you haven't seen yours yet, but chances are there's a lot more in it this week than there was just a few weeks ago. Did you know that between Thanksgiving and Christmas, the amount of trash that we throw out goes up by 25%? Probably not a big surprise. Certainly not a surprise to Carly Sapirsky. She is the sustainability manager at Virginia Tech University, and she joins us now on the Business Lunch. Carly, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
All right, so you look at all things sustainable, right? And I would imagine Christmas, the joy of Christmas, is also sort of wasteful.
Absolutely, yes. It's a wonderful time where we buy gifts for our loved ones, but we also need to kind of take a look at our own personal lives and personal habits and examine how much we're wasting as well.
You know, I was looking at some of your suggestions, and they seem fairly easy, and some of them maybe not as obvious as others. And I did not realize, for example, that wrapping paper is useless when it comes to recycling.
That is correct, yes. Due to the dyes and the inks that are used on most wrapping paper you can buy in a store, it does not make it eligible for curbside recycling.
So what's the alternative? I guess a gift bag would be better, right? Because at least that's reusable.
Exactly, yep. So, saving your gift bags, things that I like to suggest are using like brown craft paper or reusing brown paper bags, and that way you can even paint on your own designs or add a little fresh, sprig of pine to the top, and that way that is recyclable.
So even if you paint or draw on the brown paper, that you can still recycle?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay, so we'll do that, and it's not a very festive color, though, Carly. That's a problem, I think.
Well, adding, like I said, adding a little bit of your own greenery or, painting on that can give it your own personal flair. And so for friends and family, they'll like to see that personalization there.
Now, have you done things like this? What have you done in your house that's really cut down on waste over Christmas?
I have, yeah. So I like to give gifts. I'll wrap gifts in old fabric scraps or old calendar pages, or sometimes just give the gift itself. Doesn't need to be wrapped. So things like, gift cards or tickets or, gifting experiences instead of things is big in my house.
You mentioned cards and gift cards. When it comes to, we almost didn't send out Christmas cards at our house this year. And I kind of was the one who wanted to do it, but I guess people would send e-cards. That would cut down on a lot of waste.
Absolutely, yes. Sending e-cards cuts down on a ton of waste because when you think about it, you get Christmas cards, they stay on the fridge or maybe in a basket for a couple of months, and then ultimately they end up in the trash.
Sometimes it's June, Carly. Sometimes it's June before we take our Christmas because we forget where we put them. So that's a good question, though, because I think there probably are a lot of people who want to do the right thing. They want to cut down on waste, but... they want to maintain tradition, too. And an e-card is nice, but it's not the same thing. I mean, there is a trade-off there, don't you think?
There is a trade-off. Like you said, in, the color of if you use brown craft paper or the physical, opening the mailbox and getting a card. But like I said before, we really have to examine our own personal habits. And when thinking about sustainability, even if we make these small changes, we can show our friends and family that we're making these changes and that they really do have a difference. So kind of creating that culture in your family and with your friends is an important aspect.
Some of the suggestions are good to practice year-round, right? For example, eating seasonally. Why is that positive when it comes to the impact on the environment?
Absolutely. So eating seasonally, that refers to eating things that are grown and harvested around the time that you're eating them. So that cuts down on transport time for the food, knowing that it hasn't, taken months to get from one place onto your plate. And it also usually means that you're buying food that's grown locally.
And we're shopping locally, too. That's good because sometimes I guess the goods are still shipped around the world, even though they might end up at a shop on your corner.
That is true. Oftentimes, things will still be shipped, but it's supporting your local economy is another important aspect of shopping locally as well. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Carly.
If you choose to shop at farmers markets or a local food co-op, then you know that food was grown locally and, was probably just harvested a week or two ago.
I was going to ask you about rechargeable batteries because it seems to me like that, I mean, it's certainly more expensive, but I'm not sure that ends up being an environment saver or not. Is it worth the investment to buy rechargeable batteries?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Rechargeable batteries that can be used dozens of times. When your kid's toy breaks and, maybe they're crying because their favorite toy is out of use, you quickly change the battery and you're more likely to throw that battery in the landfill, which is not disposing of them properly. So with rechargeable batteries, you can keep some on hand in the charger so you know that when that toy breaks, you have charged up batteries ready to go.
Carly Sapirsky is the sustainability manager at Virginia Tech University. Carly, have a great holiday season. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Steve.